number 072394, Marvin F. Trier against the City of South Beloit. Mr. Reese.
Good morning, Your Honors. May this argument convince the court and the defendant. I was looking for a key that distinguishes the difference between the two cases that destroy the fact that they've been held to be parallel. Last time, the opinion of the court dealt with basically a complaint, and there's been some developments in the case since that time, and I've submitted four cases that aren't contained in the brief that I think clearly distinguishes the difference between the two. The one case, you've got a case in which there's been a demolition, and we've alleged a violation of due process in that, and you've got the other one, which is a taking case. Involves a totally different set of proofs, burden of proof. I found two cases. One is the Village of Lake Villa, which I've provided a citation to the court. In that case, the circuit court had entered an order of demolition, and there was an appeal. And the went on up to the second district, found the demolition statute unconstitutional. It went to the Illinois Supreme Court. The Illinois Supreme Court reversed the trial court, held the statute was constitutional, but said there were some specific requirements that were necessary to establish due process. Number one, that there was proper notice, but number two, that there was a hearing at which evidence would be presented, and the burden was on the municipality to show that it was dangerous and that repair could not be initiated that would enable it to be put into proper condition. Here, there was the destruction without a court order, without a court hearing, without an opportunity to extend repair, which was a clear violation of due process, so that when you get into those issues, that's a fairly simple, straightforward case. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court cited another case, the City of Aurora, which we provided a citation, which held that destruction of the property is only warranted if the danger can't be abated in any other way, and that repair is warranted when it can correct the condition. And the law is well settled that the cases can't go any further than is absolutely necessary. So that here in the district court, and you've had the additional testimony, incredible that they, in my judgment, that the commissioners knew nothing about the litigation, didn't know anything about the repair opportunities, didn't know any of that. There was not a semblance of or a scintilla of compliance with due process with reference to the destruction of that property. And it's kind of like, maybe this is a poor illustration, but it's kind of like a guy gets arrested on the street, false arrest. He's on his way to the station, and the police officer in the car, driving the car in which he's sitting, is driving carelessly. They have an accident, and the guy's injured. Now you get two claims. Both of them originated out of the basic foundation, but one is a false arrest. The other one is a PI. They're a distinct case. And here, the last opinion said, well, I selected the state court. Well, Your Honors, you don't, in a case of this kind where you were dealing with a small piece of property and you wanted to get an injunction to stop it and to have a hearing under the law, you don't go to federal court. You file a state action, and to save money on a jury, I just filed a non-jury case. It should have been heard by a judge. That's the law. But then you have the destruction of the property. Now you got a different ball game. And I'm not running from a judge. I'm trying to find a jurisdiction and a right for a diversity client that he's entitled to under the law. Okay, now you move. I've given the court a couple of cases from taking. Lucas case and the Montpelier case.
The state case is still on appeal.
But the state case, if you've read the briefs that I filed with the appellate court, they finally reversed the state court for the second time. And I got gently chastised for whining about a judge. I wasn't whining. I've been around the block a few years, and the judge in the first case, in my judgment, simply, for whatever reason, didn't read the cases or didn't understand them, ruled against me, got reversed. Now then, the second time, he knocked me out of court totally on the grounds that he didn't have jurisdiction, and every issue, there was not a scintilla of a basis for that holding. He was reversed the second time. I'm back in the state court. I tried to get a jury in the appellate court. I couldn't. And so in the state court, I'm stuck without a jury. Under the Seventh Amendment, where you're dealing with a due process, you get a right to a jury. And the second thing, the issue is, I think that I got a right to amend that complaint in the federal court. I don't think the judge can tell me I can't amend it. Oh, he can tell me that, but I think he's wrong. And I think there's a Fourth Amendment claim, which is totally distinctive from a takings claim. Different proof and everything, and I've got a right to pursue that in the federal court. Not have to try and fool around with this. So I get a problem with the distinguishing of convincing this court that there is a distinction. And if you read the Lucas case and the City of Monterey case, and you look at the instructions that have been approved by the Supreme Court, you look at a series of proofs and burdens that are totally different than occur in this destruction case, where I think the facts that are elicited now almost show that you're entitled to a summary judgment for due process, and then the issue goes to damages.
What specifically is the distinction? The building has now been demolished, and before it hadn't been demolished?
Yeah, it was in the process of being constructed under an ordinance for a variance by the city council. And when there's a whole number of hoops that you got to jump through in terms of an ordinance is being claimed that it wasn't being followed, that was not done in this case, and that's a whole different area. But in addition to that, you got the property destroyed without a court order, without a hearing, and that's a totally distinct issue from a takings claim where there is a burden. As a matter of fact, in the destruction, the burden is on the municipality to show that they jumped out through all of the hoops. They gave a right notice. They provided a hearing. They gave a right to repair, even after the order of demolition was entered, so that I never had a chance to file anything because the order had not been entered by the time the property was destroyed.
What relief are you trying to receive in state court now?
I'm trying to, in state court, it's a takings claim. I'm stuck there. I wish I was in federal court, but I'm not. And it's a takings claim. And I'm entitled, frankly, under a 1983 action in the federal district court where my claim is the commissioners were operating under a color of law. They didn't know anything about the case. Nothing. And I'm interested who in the world I've been dealing with. You think you're talking to the lawyer, you're thinking you're talking to the client. I don't know who I was talking to, but in the state court, I got a takings claim. I'm entitled to a jury under 1983. It's unlikely that I'm going to get one. In the federal court, I got a jury, and I got one, a right to one under the Seventh Amendment. The issues are different. The proof is different. And in the state court, who knows, in light of the handling I've gotten, that I'm going to get a jury.
Well, you're looking for financial compensation in both courts, as I understand, right? You're
looking
for an injunctive relief.
Yes, sir. Hmm? Yes, sir. I am. This is a fundamental right of property. They destroyed this guy's property. I'm looking at the stuff that you got laying on the bench. I've been fighting for 8 years to get a confounded hearing. I should have had a hearing at the outset in the state court. I didn't get one. They destroyed the man's property. I filed an action in the federal district court, which I got a right to do under the law, and I've got a right to continue the state court action. But it's a different ball game in a taking case. You just read those taking cases. That's my argument, Your Honors. I think I'm into my rebuttal time.
Actually, you've used all of your time, sir. But
okay.
We'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
All right, sir.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Mr. Balog. Mr. Balog, we ask counsel some questions, and he really got a bit more time, so I'm going to give you an additional 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Steve Balo on behalf of the City of South Beloit, if it please the court. I'm going to quote from footnote 12 in this court's opinion in what I'll just refer to in shorthand as Tyrer 1. It's troubling that Mr. Tyrer limited reference to the demolition in his state claim to takings issues, while narrowly drawing his federal complaint to allege only a due process claim. Both claims could have and should have been brought in the state forum. I would suggest that Mr. Tyrer is using duplicative and vexatious litigation in multiple forums with a clear purpose. This court has suggested that he should bring all of his claims in a single forum, and defendants have begged him to do the same. Yet, he continues down a path of delay, obfuscation, and expense. The state appellate court, Your Honor, you asked about the status of the state matter. The state appellate court has given Mr. Tyrer his day in court. In fact, what happened was the trial court had granted the motion for summary judgment based on a failure to comply with the Illinois Administrative Review Law, and the appellate court reversed on that grounds and remanded the matter for a trial on the merits. On November 13, 2007, just a couple of weeks ago, I was in court in the state trial court on a motion to set the matter for a trial. Mr. Tyrer objected to setting that matter for a trial, instead arguing that discovery in the state court matter hadn't really begun, that amended complaints needed to be filed, and that another state court appeal would be filed if the trial court judge there did not grant him a jury. This panel may recall that the reason Mr. Tyrer doesn't have a jury in the state court matter is because he failed procedurally to file a jury demand, not because he's been denied his substantive right to a jury. He just stood here and said, all I want's a hearing, and I would offer that the delaying tactics that we've seen since 2000 do not reflect a man who wants to be heard on the merits. In the federal courts, Mr. Tyrer has filed this appeal and suggests that he should be allowed to simultaneously conduct discovery and prepare for trial in the federal court at the same time that he's preparing for a trial in the state court, despite the fact that, and I quote this court again, it is clear that Mr. Tyrer's two suits are parallel. First, Mr. Tyrer raises the same due process claim in both state and the federal court. In both suits, he alleges the city of South Beloit arbitrarily or without legal authorization interfered with the use of his property, end quote. Again, I would suggest that Mr. Tyrer's litigation tactics are transparent. In the instant appeal, Mr. Tyrer argues that there are changed circumstances in the state courts that justify allowing him to proceed simultaneously with his parallel actions in both forums. He cannot and does not, however, articulate any such changed circumstances. This appeal, I would offer, is implicitly offensive to the concept of the law of the case and overtly offensive to the courts of the state of Illinois. Moreover, I would offer that there is a real question under the circumstances of this case whether further appeals should be allowed in the federal courts. The questions arise every time the state courts make any sort of ruling in this state court case. Will that result in the filing of another motion to lift the stay? And if the state court order is not dispositive of the entire state court case, will that result in another appeal if the district court refuses to lift its stay? Another question, why does Mr. Tyrer steadfastly refuse to simply join all of his claims in a single action in either the federal or the state court and proceed? On the collateral issue of the filing of an amended complaint, Mr. Tyrer again demonstrates no less than wanting a second bite at the apple. The amended complaint he seeks to file in the federal court is the exact same amended complaint he sought to file when we were here before this court on Tyrer 1. It's respectfully submitted that this court should affirm the order of the district court refusing to lift the stay previously entered and denying leave to file an amended complaint. That's all I have.
Let me ask you, do we have jurisdiction in this case?
Your Honor, the case law would suggest that under normal circumstances, appellate jurisdiction would exist because it's a refusal to lift the stay. So I'm not sure that it's a jurisdictional argument. It strikes me, however, that there may not be jurisdiction as to the leave to file the amended complaint because that's an order, much like under the Erb case, which is cited in the briefs, which was dealt with the first time we were up on appeal, and the Erb case would say you can't create a new 30-day window for that type of appeal. But as to the motion to lift the stay, I think I would be hard-pressed to say you don't have jurisdiction. I think it's more a law of the case question. I think that there are, for lack of a better word, equitable reasons why, because the term I use in the brief is that we are looking at a twilight zone of litigation. Every time the state court does anything, if Mr. Tyrer comes back and says, Judge, the circumstances have changed in the district court, lift the stay, you know, we could theoretically perpetually be up and down unless and until the matter is disposed of entirely by the state court.
I gather there are no other questions, Mr. Bailock. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Reese, you have 1 minute.
On the question of joining the cases in the federal court, I'd be willing to make this kind of a deal, that the state action on taking, if we could transfer it into the federal court without objection to the pleadings that have been filed, without objection on the basis of res judicata, and try it all in the federal court, I'm fine to do that. You know, and he recites what's going on in the state court after the appeal. The thing of it is he wants to jam this into a trial without giving the plaintiff a right to a jury, without assessing the issues of a 1983. You know, I'm pushed to the edge here of...
Was he correct that you didn't file a jury demand?
You know, let me just answer that straightforward, Judge. You know, there are practical issues in the trial court that are not contained in the rhetoric that comes out of a court many times. I had a simple...
Well, I asked a question. Did you or didn't you?
I didn't, and I'll tell you the reason. Because it was a simple issue of getting a hearing before a trial judge. You didn't need a jury. I wanted to save the expense on this small case for a jury. So now they destroy the guy's property. That's a fundamental issue of a property right, that a guy's had his property destroyed without any due process. Now he's been deprived of the use of it for over 8 years, and we get a case on taking. So when I'm back in state court, I want to find out who I've been dealing with. The commissioners don't know anything about it. Who's been making the decisions in the state court? That issue deals with the 1983. There are fundamental issues of rights that a client has to pursue.
I think we have the point, sir, and your time has expired. Thank you.